but it didn't occur to me I'd forgotten to grab the water jugs from up in the cave. I almost climbed back down and got them myself, but then I remembered her request to be told what to do. "Sheila, please get the water jugs," I ordered. "You seem to have forgotten them."
"Yes, I suppose I did," she said as she climbed off of Hope's back. "I will do as you wish."
Sheila seemed happy enough to follow my orders. I was left to wonder if these women always knew what they were doing, and I really was the clueless male just along for the ride. Despite being in charge of the construction and planning as well as the dinosaur taming, they were in complete control of my heart. Sheila had just sent it skipping across my fluttering stomach without giving me one clue of her intentions. All I could do was shake my head. I started to watch her bend over to hang the clay containers onto her spear, but I looked away so I wouldn't be tempted to gawk at her cleavage when she climbed back up to me.
"We can go now, Victor,"
she purred in my ear as soon as she was mounted behind me, and I pushed Hope around toward the stream. While we rode to the stream for water, I reveled in the sensation of having her hold my midsection. We didn't speak while we filled the jugs and let Hope drink, but I noticed Sheila watching me out of the corner of her eye. When we returned to the cave, I parked Hope in her enclosure below, and then we settled around the outdoor fire at the top of the ramp. Galmine had cooked one of the many orange birds we'd been killing lately, but after tearing through the meal, I forced myself to keep talking so that I wouldn't pass out from exhaustion. "I see Jinx is comfy," I said to the gray woman. The little blue bird was nestled inside Galmine's crossed legs, and she tossed blueberries to him every so often. No matter how tired I was, it warmed my heart to see my little pal.
"He is very comfortable, Victor,"
Galmine replied in a suggestive voice.
"You should try it sometime."
"That does look relaxing." I'm sore all over. Both my arms were blasted from working with the axes on those large trees, and my legs and ass were wrecked from sitting on Hope's back.
"I also give great massages."
Galmine let out a girlish giggle and rubbed her hands together.
I couldn't believe my luck, and was ready to rip off my shirt for her, but the gray-skinned woman turned her eyes back over my shoulder.
"Trell's back there, isn't she?" I asked quietly. We all turned to watch as Trell walked toward us on her human feet. Her silk dress seemed pasted onto her hourglass shape, and her jaw-dropping cleavage glistened from drops of sweat, as if she'd just stepped out of the shower.
"Ah, good. He's back from doing chores,"
the spider woman gestured to the group with her hand.
"I have an announcement, and you all need to pay attention."
"This ought to be good," I joked with mild annoyance because she just stopped me from getting a Galmine rubdown.
"Oh, it is,"
Trell said as her lips curved up into a strange smile. The raven-haired woman stood next to me, but spoke to the other two.
"Ladies, I admit I doubted your initial impressions of Victor as a male of any worth,"
the spider woman gestured to me.
"However, after he and I chatted, I have been carefully reviewing his activity on this planet and have now revised my opinion. He no longer bears any resemblance to the inept males of my world. I was impressed with his fortitude in dealing with the destruction of our first fort. His taming of Hope was another moment of significance. Now the new fort is about to become a reality. After weighing all these factors, I have come to a conclusion."
All our eyes were on her as we waited for the punchline.
"I have decided to mate with you, Victor,"
Trell said as she peered right into my eyes.
"Say what?"
I asked as my mouth fell open. I got to my feet so I could see her better, but also so I could take a step away.
"This is where you all applaud,"
Trell stated as if to remind us of our duty. She looked at Galmine and Sheila while her eyes narrowed a bit.
"Oh, this is good news,"
Galmine said as she clapped her hands together and smiled at me.
"Yes, it is,"
Trell said as she shook her inky black hair, raised her nose in the air, and cleared her throat. I said. "Is it really?" I started to say before Trell talked over me.
Tonight, in my private chambers, you, Victor, may meet me for a night of intense sex, so that I may procreate.
Trell went on.
You will be my third suitor, so I am well versed in male satisfaction. I will take you beyond any sexual fantasy you can imagine. After all, I must extract as much of your seed as possible.
She glanced at me with those dark eyes and licked her lips. My stomach dropped and all the blood left my face.
Trell, are you...
I started to ask, but she interrupted me again.
Tomorrow, while you bask in the glory of your greatest sexual experience, I will inject my venom into your throat.
Trell said as if it were no big deal.
Your body shall begin its transformation to support our young.
There was another long pause that was only interrupted by a happy toot from Hope.
Oh,
Galmine said as she paused mid-clap.
That actually doesn't sound good.
Transformation? Sheila asked.
Yes, of course,
Trell answered as she rolled her head back in annoyance. I imagined that she also rolled her eyes, but it was hard to tell because they were pure black.
My brood will need sustenance when they are born. Victor's corpse will give them the nutrients that they need to grow into adolescence.
The blood retreated from my dick, and my previously aroused mood was replaced by fear. I heard every word of Trell's statement, but my confused mind imagined she was talking about a different Victor. She was going to fuck that other guy, inject poison so her young could eat his body, then she would raise his kids without him. It was so alien that my imagination couldn't make any sense of it.
You are not going to kill Victor, Trell,
Sheila said with a long sigh.
Do you not see the problem with that?
I admit it will present some challenges for us after he is gone, but he has shown us the general idea of the fort, and soon we can have an army of my children to help us build it.
Trell explained as she swished her hands from her chest to her legs.
Besides, he will really enjoy the experience. What better way is there for a male to die than during the process of inseminating this perfect body?
But Sheila began.
What?
Trell demanded.
This is a high honor for Victor. In a record time, he has erased from the very bottom of my suitors list all the way to the top. It is my way of showing affection for a deserving male.
Couldn't we just have sex without you killing me? I asked without thinking. I was still in shock, so it took a few seconds for me to realize I just asked her to sleep with me.
What would be the point of that? I need to procreate, and you have proven your bloodline is worthy. I will sing high praises about you to our offspring, so you don't need to worry about that.
She still spoke as if her request was perfectly reasonable.
Trell, I love you, but Sheila's right,
Galmine said in an appropriately concerned voice.
You cannot kill Victor, especially since I belong to him. No, that came out wrong. What I mean is, I don't want you to kill Victor at all. Not ever. Not for any reason.
There is plenty of time if you would also like to mate with him,
Trell carried on.
Why don't you engage in sex now? I can delay for a day and use him tomorrow night once his testicles have renewed his sperm. Sheila, if you'd like...
Whoa! I interrupted. I'm honored to be on your list or whatever, but I'm not planning on dying just to have sex with you, Trell.
Just to have sex?
Trell asked with a groan of annoyance.
This is lovemaking, not using each other like animals. It would be the most incredible night of your life.
She always sounded self-assured, but this time she seemed even more confident. I felt the blood go back to where it belonged, and my heart rate picked up its pace due to the nature of the discussion. Even if it was impossible to consider taking her up on her offer, I couldn't help but feel pretty fucking stoked that she was the second woman in our group who wanted to make love to me. No. Sheila and Galmine both responded firmly in unison.
You cannot sleep with him if you plan to kill him,
Sheila declared. Trell placed her hands on her hips and stared at me for 10 seconds while two of her spider legs clicked with impatience. She seemed to make up her mind as she spun to face Galmine and Sheila across the fire.
Ugh. stupid male! Fine. I'll ask tomorrow.
Trell glared at me once more before she walked away. I turned to watch her go back into the cave, but before she got too far away, I thought of an appropriate reply. I won't change my mind tomorrow, Trell. Not about the death part, anyway. I called out in a surprisingly eager voice. Despite the danger she represented, and even after appreciating the alienness of her folded spider legs, I couldn't stop myself from imagining what it would be like to pull off her thin dress and feel her naked body against mine. I was still staring at where Trell disappeared into the cave when Galmine nudged me.
Victor? Would you like that massage now?
The green-eyed woman queried in a teasing way. Sheila coughed to get my attention.
I brought the materials to build the bows and arrows you wanted. Would you like to do those now or later?
The cat-eyed woman appeared anxious to begin. I looked back and forth at Sheila and Galmine, knowing what was better for our long-term survival. Galmine, I have to take a rain check. I mean, delay on that massage. We really need to craft some bows. As I said the words, I couldn't believe I was turning her down again.
That's okay, the gray-skinned woman replied. I'll add this to your growing list of sweet things you owe me.
Before I let myself get distracted by what she was going to do to me, I shuffled myself around the campfire so I could sit next to Sheila. I briefly noticed the emerging fireflies and other bugs down in the grove. But that show could no longer hold my attention while work had to be done.
I've got all this set up.
Sheila motioned to some sticks and untwisted cord she'd placed off to the side of the walkway.
I can trim the bows and string them if you'll cut and sharpen these smaller shoots of wood into arrows.
She handed me a bunch of straight branches as well as a pile of orange and black feathers from the numerous birds we'd killed. Well, that's not a bad plan, I replied as I settled in next to her. But I want to learn how to make bows, too.
I assumed you would, she said as she pulled a 5-foot-long branch from her pile. This sapling was about as thick around as my grip, but I split it down the middle so it is round on one side and flat on the other.
She showed both sides to me and then gestured to the other half of the split tree lying in her pile. I assumed this was for the second bow and moved to pick it up.
We need to taper the ends with our blades and add notches so we can attach the bowstring, Sheila said. If you agree, I will carve one half to show you how it should look, and then you can do the other end.
Works for me, I replied with enthusiasm. How about I bang out some arrows while you're doing that first part? I needed to stay busy and always have 2 or 3 tasks going at the same time, so I'd watch her demo, work on the arrows, and keep an eye on Hope.
Of course, she answered.
Galmine, could I get you to twist the bowstrings? I asked our partner at the fire.
Yes, I would love to,
the bubbly woman replied with more of her endless enthusiasm. The arrows were time-consuming, but not that complicated. Sheila showed me how to measure and cut so the shafts would be about as long as my arm. Then I got busy scraping the bark down the length with our stone knives, tying feathers on the back for stability, and hardening the sharp point in the fire. I thought I moved pretty fast, but a half hour later I'd only just started my second one when she was finished with her end of the bow.
Here you go, Victor.
My bushcraft tutor handed over the weapon as well as the sharp cutting stone. After watching me scrape and cut the other end of the bow for a few moments, she turned to her own chores and left me to it. I wasn't close to done after the first half hour, but she already had 4 arrows completed, so I wiped my brow and dove right back into my job. When I stopped about 15 minutes later, she was working with a long piece of cloth-like bark, about 4 feet long and 10 inches wide. She noticed me put down the bow, so she began showing me what she was doing.
You fold this thin bark in half, Sheila said as she joined the top and bottom together like she was closing a book. And then you tie around the 2 ends so the arrows do not slide out the sides. We will add another rope so we can sling it over our shoulders.
She held it up to show me what it was going to look like when it was done, and it was obviously an arrow quiver like I'd seen in the movies.
Damn! How are you moving so fast?
I laughed. It wasn't a competition, and Sheila had a lifetime of forest experience over me. But there was no excuse for not striving to be the best at these life-saving crafts.
You are good with your hands, and your technique is competent, Sheila said dryly. So it is only a matter of practice and repetition before you will be besting me.
Her voice changed a little in her final words like she was excited, but it could just as easily have been tiredness.
Here you go,
Galmine said with cheery pride. It's one of my best. The silver-haired woman had been working the whole time quietly, but she wore a radiant smile as she handed over a coil of cord.
Thank you, Sheila said to her. This looks perfect for our bowstring. You are most welcome,
Galmine replied. She popped one of the blueberries in her mouth like it was a reward for finishing the project, but then she gave another to Jinx.
May I?
Sheila asked when she saw I was done with my work. I think I got it. I handed her the bow, and we both got to our feet.
It looks good,
she said with a nod.
The wood must have a curve in it when the bowstring is attached. That is the last step. If you hold the shaft, I will tie it off.
It seemed a lot easier with two people because she could use both hands with the rope. When it was hooked on the bottom and tied around the topmost notch, she smiled and pushed the bow in my direction.
For you,
Sheila grinned.
I'll get started on a second one.
For us, I replied as we both held it. Before you do anything, show me how to make arrows as fast as you do. How many will we need? I let go of the bow and grabbed the lone arrow I'd made. I figured we'd need a lot, but all my knowledge of these weapons came from video games, and resupplying was often as simple as walking over them with my avatar. Between the two of us, we'd made about 5 in the last hour.
We eventually need to have hundreds, she said,
as if she were a teacher handing out a boring assignment. I did mental calculations about how long that would take, and knew I had to get a shitload faster at the task. One more for the endless list of shit I had to do in Dinosaur Land. You expecting trouble? I joked.
Oh, yes. In this time, I do not plan on losing my bow,
Sheila whispered to me. I know, I said, hoping to cheer her up. I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen. She did smile a bit, but we both got to work rather than talk further about the looming threat to our lives. My night had lots of cutting and scraping and zero massages. I slept for a little while when Sheila took her shift watching Hope. Rest was hard to grab, though, so I ended up doing more arrow sharpening because my mind would not shut off. The next day, I fought off my exhaustion as I rode Hope to the watering hole with Sheila. While on her back, the threats of the forest seemed more distant. I had the strangest sensation that my animal-loving parents were somewhere up above cheering me on. I was pretty sure I could ignore sleeplessness forever as long as Hope was there each morning to remind me how fucking awesome each day was going to be. I was still riding that high at midday when Sheila and I were ready to set the first of the big logs into the trench we made the day before. We slid the 10-footer around so it was lined up with the back edge of the hole and then looked for the best way to get it in. I say we just grab it, I began. It doesn't seem that heavy when we're pushing it around.
Perhaps we can use a rope to lift it up,
Sheila suggested. Do we need a rope? Let's just try using our hands. I've been thinking about hooking Hope to complex ropes and levers and fulcrums all night, but that all seemed overly complicated for the problem, so I figured we should try the simple solution first.
I'm willing to do as you say,
the blonde woman remarked. We both grabbed the side of the log near the far end and lifted it up. I was surprised how light the long hunk of tree was, but I wondered if Sheila's strength was a big part of that. We pushed together over our heads, and it sort of balanced on the edge of the hole as we walked it higher and higher into the air. Just before it stood straight up and down, the pole slid into the hole. That was a snap! I shouted as we engaged in another high five. Yesterday I had Hope dig about 10 feet of trench as the start to our first wall, and I could imagine how we would drop one log after the other in there.
It is still unstable,
Sheila replied as she wiggled the log a bit. That's fine, I replied. I'll have Hope fill in the dirt around the base, then it won't move.
That will create a gap as each log needs to have its own hole,
Sheila pointed out. We can use cord to tie each log to its neighbors, and we can fill in the front and back parts of the hole so it can only wiggle side to side. The newer logs will be tied in, and soon there'll be no movement in any direction. My mind raced as I realized this was going to be a bit easier than I thought it would be.
I think it will work,
Sheila said in sudden agreement. We both shared a moment of accomplishment until we faced an interruption.
You know you're doing it wrong,
Trell said as she walked up like she owned the place. Then she leaned on a spear, as Sheila often did. I couldn't help glancing her way with a look of skepticism.
That's correct,
Trell pointed to the log we'd just dropped into the ground.
But pretty much everything else you're planning to do will be wrong.
Okay. What would you do differently? I asked. I knew the key to Trell was asking her ways to do things better than a dumb male such as myself would do. But her lack of any personal insults suggested she might be serious about helping this time.
You are planning on using these giant logs all the way around?
Trell asked as she pushed against the heavy lumber already set in the ground. We used 6-inch-wide logs for the old fort, and the dinos trampled it like it was nothing, so I figured using something twice as large would be enough. You think we should go bigger? I cringed at the thought of downing bigger trees, but was ready to do what was necessary to make it safe.
Not if you want to finish before the birds arrive,
Trell said with a smile to show she didn't mean it as her usual insult.
No, Mel. I would use these bigger logs only at the corners for added strength, and use smaller logs in between. Or eliminate the corners completely and build in a circle.
She snapped her black bone-looking fingers as if she'd just thought of something.
Forget the square,
Trell said with excitement.
You need to make a circle. The fort should be anchored every 10 feet by heavy logs, but you can use 8-inch-wide logs in between. Because you are building in a circle, it will be much stronger than a flat wall if struck by dinosaurs.
Why will a circle be stronger? I asked. Aren't triangles the strongest shapes?
Maybe for bridges, or for structures where a single flat side is going to be pushed all together. Look at this.
Trell's spider legs pushed down into the dirt and her human-shaped body tilted horizontally so she could pick up a bunch of twigs on the ground without getting her dress dirty.
If you have them in a straight line, what happens when something pushes on one of the logs?
She asked after she pushed some twigs into the dirt so that they looked like a wall. I'm not sure. I didn't know what she was getting at, and she sighed with a bit of annoyance.
The log will fall. See?
She pushed one of her claw-like fingers against the stick, and it toppled over. But we're digging deep into the dirt. It'll take a lot of force to knock it down. I gestured back to the single log we had already put up.
Yes, but it can still be pushed over. We will need to put a support beam on the inside at an angle.
Okay, so we can...
But that will take extra logs and extra cutting time. Or you do a circle. Look and learn, Mel.
Trell arranged the sticks in the ground again in a tight semicircle, and then she pressed against one of the sticks. Huh, I said, after the log didn't fall down. Are you pressing as hard?
Look closely. Why isn't it falling?
Trell's mouth turned into a half-smile, and I could see her vampire-looking fangs.
Oh, shit,
I gasped after I crouched and really studied what was going on. The sticks are behind the other ones. That's why they aren't falling.
Of course, I'm a genius. It's because the circle shape has natural strength. If something pushes on one of the logs, the two placed slightly behind it will provide additional support. Then the ones behind those will take the energy and so on. The whole wall will work together to take weight when something presses against the side. It won't be perfect, but we only have limited time and logs, so this is the best building method.
Damn, I said. Thanks. It was amazing how easily she could see the problems in our design and suggest modifications.
I'm hot and bored now,
Trell said as she started to walk away.
I will go back inside the cave.
I turned to Sheila and gave her a wait-a-sec gesture, but then I ran to catch up with Trell.
Please stop,
I said as nicely as I could.
What is it?
The regal woman replied as if I'd really bothered her. Trell, I thought we made a lot of progress as of late. After our hug and after you, invited me to die for your spawn, I said before she interrupted me.
It's not about the death part,
she snapped before I could continue. Before you invited me to a pleasurable night with you, I corrected myself before going on. Look, I'm sorry I don't want to have your kids, but I can't lie down and die or that will leave Sheila and Galmine without my protection. I didn't think I needed to spell it out for her again, but I wasn't going to take that chance.
Ugh, you are so selfish.
She crossed her arms and groaned. I'm selfish? I asked as I tried to figure out what she was talking about.
Yes, all you think about is yourself. You don't think about me or our beautiful babies.
Are you fuck... Ugh. Are you serious right now? I mirrored her movement by crossing my own arms.
Yeah, cool dude.
When Trell spoke, she gave her words a Southern California accent and raised one of her eyebrows.
We don't even have babies,
I sighed.
Because you won't be a good male and inseminate me. Like I said, so selfish. Am I not beautiful? Do you not wish to climax inside of me? Did you forget about how many males on my planet wanted that privilege? Ugh! You are so dumb and selfish and an idiot.
I kind of just don't want to get eaten. Can your, brood eat something else when they're born? I asked, but even as the words left my mouth, I knew I was sliding down a really slippery slope.
Don't you want the best for our children?
Trell's voice was rising now, and I turned my head to see Sheila shrug. Look, Trell, can we talk about something else more important for a bit? I asked.
There is nothing more important than my offspring, male.
Well, I think it's kind of critical that we live through the next few weeks, or you won't have any brood or babies or whatever with me or anyone else. So can we talk about that? I didn't even want to get into the discussion of us being able to have children. We were totally different species, so I doubted that she would get pregnant if we had sex.
Go on,
she said cautiously, and I took a deep breath to steady my nerves. All this talk about fucking her and having babies and then getting eaten by said babies was doing bizarre stuff to my libido. Trell, you are an amazing person, and it's hard for me to say anything about you now that won't sound like I'm kissing your ass. The truth is, I'm flattered by your offer, and though I'm not ready to die to have sex with you, I do find you beautiful.
Of course you do.
She snickered.
I am the most beautiful woman you have ever seen.
My point is, you were in your element back there, and we could all really use your help.
Ugh. With the camp?
She asked dryly.
Yeah.
It is very likely that we'll fail if we don't get your help. If we fail, we are all going to die. I hated to put it in such stark terms, but who knew what delays we'd experience while building the next structure?
Ew. But building is such peasant work. Can I give advice from afar?
You can do as much or as little as you want, but just know you're saving our butts on the countdown clock, I said with relief.
And you will inseminate me?
She asked with a beautifully raised eyebrow.
I will promise you a night of pleasure that you could never imagine.
I held her gaze for several seconds, and for a short time I was balanced between two possible answers to that question. Her amazing breasts were visible under her sheer dress, but I was getting good at ignoring them, at least for short bursts when I needed a clear mind. Sorry, Trell. I find you beautiful and smart, but I don't want to die. I want us all to live. That's why I'm working so hard on these walls. Will you help us? Her black orb searched my eyes for several moments, but then she glanced behind me. The black-haired woman didn't reply, but seemed to look around at our job site, the old fort, and the woods in general. I noted that her eyes fluttered in a way that suggested she was using her IQ.
We need a door for your dinosaur.
Trell began as she walked back toward the construction site.
We need to pace out the perimeter of our wall. We can drag the branchy tops of all those discarded trees and form reefs around our fort. They will slow down or deflect running dinosaurs, so they never get close to the enclosure. Of course, I have many other ideas.
I wasn't sure what just happened, but I figured I'd said the right thing.
You cut this by hand?
Trell said when she saw tree number 2 lying on the ground. We cut it at the base, then chopped it at about 10 feet, I said. It bothered me that I might have missed a better way to do it, and I tried to think of alternatives, but I kept coming back to bigger axes or making some sort of giant saw. Trell studied the tree, and I distinctly noticed her eyes flicker in the IQ again.
You can save a lot of labor if you lit a fire. Just as you use the flame to burn a hole in your axe, you can use it to break the trunk in two,
Trell suggested. Won't that take a long time? I asked while thinking of how long it took to burn one little hole in my axe.
Drop multiple trees, start multiple fires. Even if it takes all day to burn through the trees, it will still save you energy and improve efficiency in the long run. Ugh, why don't you know this?
Trell sighed dismissively as if I'd skipped the logging portion of my high school education. Won't the smoke bring in dinosaurs? I asked as I ignored her last question.
The smoke may also chase them away,
the black-haired woman suggested.
I think that's a great idea, I said.
Of course it's a great idea, she snickered. I thought of it after all.
Trell, do you mind if I ask why you have your IQ open? I continued in my most polite voice.
Well, once you showed us how you used the interface to identify and interact with your dinosaurs, I left the interface open because more data is always better,
she replied while tapping a long bony finger against her temple.
I don't know how it does it, but I'm able to see things in a new way. I have a lot of my genius ideas without the computer, too. This just makes it seem to go faster.
It was my turn to snap my fingers together.
Fuck! I bet that's the key, I said as I addressed Sheila. Do you ever turn on the IQ?
I have turned it on, but mostly have it off because I do not like the interference in my vision.
Sheila replied. Even in combat? I asked.
Especially in combat, she said. I need to stay focused.
Next time you're in a fight, turn it on, I suggested. I think it has to be on for your skill to work properly. I've been turning mine on to get IDs of dinosaurs and to confirm my tame was working, but it looks like there's more to it. I think it has to be running to first use our special abilities. I turned mine back on, and I was never going to turn it off again. Trell, what do you see in your interface when you look at where our fort is going to be? I asked while I pointed to the surrounding ground.
Nothing, she replied while looking down. I just see the forest floor.
Okay. What about right here? I pointed to the lone pole butted up against the bark of the sequoia.
Nothing. Though I've had a thought.
The beautiful spider woman rubbed her chin with her chitinous claws as if thinking hard.
To make a swinging dinosaur door, you'll need two extra tall logs set about 5 feet apart with large holes drilled through the tops. Get a small straight tree trunk and hang it across this space by pushing it through those holes. Then you'll need to build a door by lashing smaller logs together in a rectangle and tie it onto the crossbar. The door will swing back and forth so Hope can pass through in each direction. Then we can place locking posts into the ground to keep it from swinging inward. That way, attacking dinosaurs cannot come inside, but we can pull them out of the ground to let Hope in. Simple.
And we'll need a dino lock so no one steals her, I added, as if we were storing a rare car in a garage back home.
That goes without saying,
Trell said with a lighthearted laugh. Trell. Thank you. You totally rock.
Galamine, is there a girl?
Trell frowned. When I say rock, it means you are great or wonderful, I explained.
Of course I am. And beautiful?
Yeah. Well, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Trell replied as if testing the phrase. Her mouth twisted a bit, and then the sides of her lips lifted. Finally had Trell on board. I spent the rest of the day trying to figure out the limits of Trell's abilities. I had her watch us cut down more trees, tow the logs, dig the holes, and outline the first parts of the wall at the start of our circle shape. In some cases, she had no suggestions at all. She didn't see any room for improvement in how we tied off the tow line on Hope, though I wondered if that was because she created the rope harness in the first place. Trell didn't seem happy with Hope's temporary enclosure, but accepted it was the best we could do, given our resources. She even complimented me on the tree barrier door idea, and hinted that she couldn't have done better herself. Hope and I can bring over lots of the treetops we've cut off, but where should I put them? I asked Trell as we took our afternoon break. We stood on the line I'd drawn in the dirt to represent where we were putting the walls. Hope was in the grove nearby and lifted her head at hearing her name. But put it right back down into some ferns. Trell seemed to study the forest, and I wondered if her IQ was feeding her suggestions, or if she saw what she wanted to build. Whenever I asked for specifics about it, she repeated her earlier claim that it didn't show anything to her.
but often that was when she got an idea, as if it was dropped into her thought process. I figured it amplified the skill already in her analytical brain, just like my tame ability tapped into my lifelong love for animals.
The most efficient pattern would be to place them in several rings around the fort. Start with a ring about 10 yards away, then a second ring about 20 yards out, then the final ring that is anchored by those trees over there.
She pointed to the next of the great redwood giants, which was about 50 yards from our home tree. More circles, I said with a knowing laugh.
Yes,
she agreed with her own bit of laughter.
You are finally getting it. Each ring will reinforce the others and keep us safe here in the middle.
Yeah. Well, as much as I love the idea, those outer circles will have to come last, I replied. First we do the walls and hut, then the fancy defenses. Once we beat the clock against those damned birds with a basic wall, we'd have the time to go all out with upgrades.
Of course,
Trell replied in a pleasant voice before adding,
Mail.
Oh, that's how it's gonna be? I chuckled.
Well, you asked for my help, so it's going to cost you one way or another,
she said with an ominous laugh. We stood there for a few more seconds in our moment when I felt a tap on my shoulder. Sheila held out the bow and quiver of arrows I'd left on the ground not far away. What's going on? I said in a quiet voice.
The birds are on the move, she said in an equally low tone. I think they're gonna attack.
The three of us got closer to our home sequoia, and Sheila pointed straight up. The familiar orange and black colors were sprinkled on many branches high above.
Those things don't give up, do they?
I growled.
They never will,
Sheila said with a bit of sadness.
More and more will show up. It's all right. We got this,
I said while checking for more birds and other trees. As best as I could tell, they were only up in the pine canopy directly above our fort. However, there were more than the 8 or so we'd faced the day before. Sheila said they would keep adding to their numbers as part of their scouting process. Is Galmine safe? I whispered while we watched.
I closed the door when I left, Trell replied. She is safe, for now.
My other concern was Hope, but she remained behind us near the leafy green patch of ferns where she liked to go when I didn't need her. As expected, she showed no concern at all for the rising war cries of the birds above us, and I channeled her calm to steady my growing nervousness. We wanted to test our bows, so I guess now we have the time, I said in jest. We'd talked about setting up a target range and testing both bows we'd made the previous night, but other projects sapped all our time today.
Shooting's very easy. Take a deep breath, and use 3 fingers to pull the string back to the same point on your jaw each time. Exhale some of the air in your lungs, and take aim on that pause between your next inhale. That'll help you be consistent. Use a nice steady pull, then a quick release. I'll bet your aim will come naturally.
Sheila showed me her method for a few seconds and pointed out how to keep the string from striking my wrist. I'll try. I slung my quiver over my shoulder, pulled out an arrow, and then knocked one against my bowstring.
I'll be around the tree in case they come that way,
Trell said as she unfurled her spider legs while clutching her spear. It was fascinating to see her spread them out, and she actually looked pretty fucking badass once all 6 were on the ground. She tapped her forehead in a little salute, and then scurried out of sight behind the bend of the giant tree. The birds were now fluttering around in the lowest branches, which were still quite a way up the side of the towering redwood, and they all squawked in unison as if they were talking. A few moments later, a couple fell from their perch and were soon followed by all the others.
Shit! They're attacking!
I yelled. The group of 12 or 15 birds spiraled downward around the trunk of the tree until they were about 2/3 of the way to the ground. They came around one last time and then dove straight down on us. Sheila shot an arrow as the birds closed the distance, but they were moving so damned fast, my first shot was barely aimed when I let it go. We flung ourselves against the tree bark, and the wave of orange veered away from us at the very last second.
Holy fuck!
I shouted as one of them clawed my hat and knocked it off my head. An orange blob smashed into the soil with a sickening crunch as if it couldn't pull out of its dive. Then I realized it met its end before it landed. The last 5 inches of an arrow stuck out of its beak, and the rest was jammed down its throat.
We got one!
I cried, knowing it was probably Sheila's shot that took it out. The flock swooped back up a little, but then changed direction again like they were all on a roller coaster. They made one pass over the cave, but then turned around and came in for a landing on the open ground between us and the ramp. At first I thought maybe they'd try to get into the cave, but once they got their feet on the open field, they turned in our direction as if we were their greatest threats.
I want to kill them all,
I said as we watched the birds hop around and flash their jagged-toothed beaks. Several more orange birds flew in as if they didn't want to miss the attack, and we soon faced 20 of them.
We'll draw them in, Sheila replied as she held back from firing another shot.
The birds relentlessly shuffled our way while keeping in a pretty tight group. They flapped their wings as if they were a mob of combative old ladies trying to use brooms to sweep us away, but it wasn't going to work on us.
Back up, but get ready, Sheila advised.
I knew better than to argue with my chief military strategist, so I did as she requested. The two of us retreated along the edge of the redwood until we were up against the lone pole we'd sunk in the ground.
This is perfect,
Sheila said quietly.
They can't get around us.
Hope was at our backs, so shooting her by mistake was impossible. I pulled the knocked arrow to my jaw as I held the string of my new bow while waiting for the perfect moment. It didn't take long.
Now!
Sheila shouted. I let go of the string when the birds were about 20 feet away. My arrow sunk right into the middle of the nearest orange dino, not the one I was aiming at, but it counts, and Sheila's arrow tore through the next one over.
Kill them!
I yelled as a war cry. A lone bird might have been scared away by my loud voice, but they were fearless in a pack, and my scream just seemed to help them hone their attack on my position. They seemed to stream toward us like an orange tidal wave. Sheila got her second shot off a moment before mine. I did a lousy job of aiming because my hands were shaking, but her shot sailed true and pegged one of the orange birds in the face. Sheila fired 2 arrows for every one of mine, which was a testament to her skill. She stepped several paces to my right so she could get some shots into the side of the flock, but that gave one of the faster runners an opportunity to get in close to me.
Holy shit!
I screamed as it charged me with its toothy mouth opened wide. It was too close to use the bow, and I remembered Sheila's warning about close combat with dinosaurs, so I readied my secondary weapon. I felt the crunch of bones as I got a solid kick with my steel-toed work boot. The turkey-sized bird slammed against the bark of the tree and fell to the ground 10 feet away. Another of the birds followed behind the one I'd kicked, but it stopped and spread its slick wings as if to show them off. I wasn't impressed, but because it was only 5 feet away, I had the perfect opportunity to finally ID the little bastards.
Gotcha,
I said as I focused on my IQ. Identification, bird, Pelagornis cardiferus, male.
Fascinating,
I said without emotion, and then I sunk an arrow into the bird. The shot wasn't anywhere near perfect, and it landed along its flank without piercing its insides. It screamed in pain, and I took 2 steps so I could kick him in the stork-like face. His neck twisted away with a snap when my steel-toed boot hit him, but I didn't have time for sympathy. Life and death were now as simple as us versus them. A couple more birds fell over as Sheila killed them with her arrows, but the crazy fucks still pressed their attack. There were way too many of them, and I felt a surge of terror seize my stomach. Then, a heavy spear fell from above and skewered one of the larger birds in the flock.
Trell!
I cried out in surprise. She'd used her spider legs to cling to the side of the redwood trunk and had come all the way around until she was about 20 feet above us. She saw me and flashed a grim smile, then walked a few feet down the trunk before leaping into the chaotic flock. Sheila shot once more, but then we both watched in awe as Trell was engulfed by the orange storm of 8 or 10 remaining birds. Her 2 back legs lashed out and dragged a couple of the birds closer to her body, where they were crushed against her other legs. She hopped a few feet off the ground and impaled 2 more birds before they could move away. Finally, she grabbed her spear and spun herself in a blur so the tips of her legs impacted any bird that was still close. She ended up in a cloud of orange and black feathers, and there were only a few birds left uninjured. I kicked the disoriented Pelagornis, and Sheila loosed an arrow against one flapping a few feet off the ground. Her shot hit, and the orange bird tumbled back down just as the last 2 birds began to retreat. Trell tossed her spear at one of them, but her aim was a bit off, and the javelin skidded across the ground and into some ferns.
They are getting away!
The spider woman screamed as the escapees took to the air. I tried to aim my bow at one of them, but I didn't trust myself to shoot over Trell's head.
Sheila managed to let loose an arrow from her spot off to the side, and it hit one of the birds in the wing. It was her last arrow, and there was still one bird left.
"Take one of mine!" I cried out as I tossed an arrow through the air to Sheila. "Use your IQ!"
Sheila caught and knocked the arrow like she practiced the move every day of the week, then blinked to call up her computer. I watched her study the target until I thought she had missed her chance to fire. At the last possible second, she let the arrow fly, and we all watched the homemade missile arc across the clearing until it made contact with a bird some 50 yards in the air. The target let out a sad cry as it spiraled to the ground like an airplane with one engine out. Then, the battle was over. Nearly 3 dozen dead birds were lying next to the redwood tree, mostly near Trell's feet. An equal number of them were spread in feathery piles around the outer edge of the battlefield. It was a lot of carnage, but my friends and I had won this battle, and I felt the surge of euphoria fill my muscles. I double-checked the sky to make sure there were no more orange birds coming for us, and then I ran over to Sheila.
"That was an incredible shot!"
I exclaimed as we both hugged each other.
"You were correct, Victor," she said while we embraced. "The computer showed me where to aim so that I could land a critical strike."
I pulled away from Sheila and turned my praise on Trell. She stood among the dead bodies of the failed attack and bent down to pick up my hat.
"Trell? That was fucking amazing!"
I gushed.
"I don't even know where to begin to tell you how cool that was! Hell, that's almost worth accepting your offer! Who knew you could fight?"
I held out my arms to make it clear I wanted to hug her, too. A couple of her spider legs had blood splashed on them, but she seemed unharmed and stepped my way with a barely suppressed grin. When she was out of the worst of the mess, she put the hat back on my head, held out her arms, and returned my hug without speaking. I was glad to have her in my arms. Her help had convinced me that we were going to be able to have our new fort built in time. But Trell also revealed a kind of mama grizzly bear fighting attitude that I never would have suspected in her. She was a great asset to the team, but I was happy to have her as a friend. We had shared some laughs today, and holding her in my arms confirmed my feelings for my 3 friends. I'd fight to the death to keep these women alive.
Chapter 15.
"It's just like a doggy door,"
I said to Trell as she demonstrated walking through Hope's swinging gate. It took us 2 weeks of hard labor to get to this point, but the extra wide door was the last big piece of our fort we had to complete. We still had a 5-foot section of wall to finish, but I was confident we'd move in by the end of today.
"I don't know what a doggy is, but whatever,"
she said with a tired laugh.
"And please teach Hope not to crash into the door when she goes in and out, or it might break apart."
"I doubt that," I replied. "You designed it to last."
"I am a genius,"
Trell agreed, while letting the door swing backward once she came through.
"But this is my first time designing structures for dinosaurs."
We'd spent every waking moment of the past 2 weeks working on the new and improved fort, and even though the birds were the reason for us moving, everything about the fort, including the stout wooden door, was designed to protect us against much bigger dinosaurs. We were on day 30 of Sheila's timeline, which is well into the red zone of when the orange-feathered nightmares were supposed to swoop in and take over. I had a bad headache from not enough sleep. Every muscle in my body was sore from endless labor, and we would soon be out of daylight. However, we were so close to finishing the fort that nothing could get me down. "We'd call you a scholar athlete back home, Trell. That means you're the whole package of smarts and muscle." As I spoke, I did my best not to check out her work outfit. When she first started offering advice, she'd do it by walking around and pointing at things while in her beautiful silk dress. But a few days ago, when it looked like we were going to miss our deadline, she came down to the job site dressed in a silk sports-cut bra and form-hugging yoga-type shorts. It looked like she had cut up her dress to make them, but I didn't ask for fear that she'd change her mind and go back into the cave. Nothing was said, but Trell picked up a log with Sheila and set it into the ground like she'd been doing it all along. Today she was working as hard as I'd ever seen her. "I'm going to go get Hope and test the gate," I stated. "I want her safe in here while we finish up."
"What can I do?"
Trell said, sounding even more stressed than I was. "You need to take a little break, or do something easy for a bit," I suggested as we both walked a few paces toward our new hut. "Maybe help Galmine with the leaves."
Okay, but I'm not stopping until we get this done,
the dark-haired woman said with exasperation.
You remember how close we were the last time. I'm not going to be responsible for another disaster.
She got to a pile of flat, pillow-sized leaves, picked up an armful, and threw them onto the top of the hut. Galmine was up there laying the leaves like shingles over the sloped wooden slats of our roof, and she caught most of Trell's bundle with an easy movement. I also threw a batch of leaves since I was standing right there. Trell had designed our yurt-like home to sit inside the larger circle of the outer wall, though part of it leaned against the sequoia's trunk. The inside was just big enough for us to sleep like spokes of a wheel around the cooking fire. There was no time to make it any bigger, but I didn't mind sleeping so close to the alluring women.
Thank you,
Galmine called down in a happy voice. Wait, you think losing the first fort was your fault? I said to Trell after my overexhausted brain figured out what she meant.
I was too proud to help back then,
the black-haired woman said as she gave a determined heave to an armful of leaves.
If I'd contributed for even one day, the fort would have been completed and built right. We would have survived the stampede and now be living in safety. I'm not going to risk that again when we are this close. Besides, you're the one who needs a break, Mael.
The spider woman glanced at me, smiled, and then brushed away some wild hair from her sweaty brow. It looked like she'd been working hard, and she had, but she was still drop-dead gorgeous. I returned the grin, though I could only imagine my own appearance.
She's right, Victor. You need rest,
Sheila said as she finished tying off another log on our wall. The feline woman was sweaty and dirty from our laboring, but the endless work never seemed to slow her down. In fact, my only worry about her was which half of her torn bikini was going to fall apart first. I hadn't slept at all the past two nights, even though I tried. I'd end up sharpening axes, twisting cord, and cutting new arrows because my brain would not stop worrying about protecting the women. After throwing a couple of armfuls of leaves with Trell, I knew it was time to go on to more critical tasks. Trell, thanks for helping me with the door, but now you have to help Sheila finish the barricade, I said as I moved toward the 5-foot hole in the front side of our wall. I'm going to get Hope and then finish the fort.
Then can we relax?
Galmine asked from up above. As much as possible in this world, yes, I replied while snagging one of our spears leaning against the hut.
I'm looking forward to relaxing with you,
the emerald-eyed woman suggested in a teasing way. I savored her words as I looked where I had to go. Hope hung out eating leaves near the ramp. I kept her close to the cave entrance as a way of making the birds think twice about going in that direction. We'd been running back and forth from the cave as we transferred our belongings to our new hut, and some of the orange birds had begun to gather in the 30 yards of open ground between the fort and the ramp. It was still possible to cross the field and avoid them, but more birds kept trickling in.
Victor, wait!
Sheila shouted with urgency.
Try not to antagonize them, she added while pointing to the orange birds. Once they think the cave is theirs, we have to be very careful of them. I shot them after they claimed their roost the last time because I did not know better. After that, they chased me for a mile any time they saw me.
I did a double take. You think they already own the cave? It had only been a couple hours since we got our last things, but we didn't send up a red flare to announce we'd abandoned the cavern.
I can only tell you of my experience. And I should have thought of this much earlier, but I suggest we be overly cautious around this breed,
Sheila said as she bent down to get another log with Trell. It also backed up the decision as to why we had to build the fort a few dozen yards out in the grove, rather than right next to the cave. You think they'll overlook that we've killed a shitload of their scouts? I said with a nervous laugh. We'd battled groups of 10 and 20 birds almost every day, but we stopped trying to kill them all. It just wasn't possible.
We shall see,
Sheila replied. There was nothing more to say, but I always trusted the athletic warrior when it came to strategy, so it seemed prudent now to leave the birds alone instead of kicking the shit out of them as I wanted to do. I jogged toward Hope and avoided the birds as much as possible. Most of them fluttered away from where I ran, but one fat bird squatted in the dust and wouldn't get out of my way. That forced me to go around it, and I thought of Sheila's words that the little orange devils might begin aggressively defending their new home.
I'm just passing through,
I suggested to the flock as I stepped around more and more birds. Nothing to see here.
Hope, lower that pretty neck,
I called out to the gray and brown parasaur when I felt I was close enough not to frighten all the birds. She was on her back legs while eating from some of the small tree branches overhead, but I sensed that she understood my anxiety. After scanning left and right, her front feet returned to the ground and then she lowered so I could mount her. I felt like an action hero as I took a running leap, flung my leg over her neck, and perfectly landed the maneuver just as Sheila had demonstrated. "Go!" I commanded. "But don't step on the little bastards." Hope trotted through the loose gaggle of noisy birds, but they cleared a path for the big dinosaur. I guided her over to the sequoia and had her walk all the way around our massive home tree. Despite everything, I was always amazed when I got close to the imposing redwood, and I gawked up the clean straight lines of the giant until we were on the back side of the fort. "This is your new home," I said to my dinosaur steed. "You're going to share space with us so we can keep each other safe." She tooted a friendly note as I edged her right up to the doggy door on the back side of the fort. "Just push it open," I suggested. Hope gingerly placed her snout against the middle of the door, and I encouraged her to push. The gate swung from its overhead hinge and began to open. The door scraped over a crest, and I had to hold up both of my arms to keep it from coming down on top of me. I held the wooden gate above me as long as I could, but had to let it drop onto the ridge of Hope's back. From there it slid down and off the end of her tail. "Fantastic!" I proclaimed. "Your spot is right there." I guided her to the large open area which served as the courtyard of our circular enclosure. A pile of logs took up some space, but there was just enough room for the big dinosaur to curl up against the outer wall. I hopped down from Hope and suggested she eat the fern leaves we'd placed for. Then I ran back to the gate and weaved a long rope through the slats of the door and tied both ends to the outer frame to keep it shut. It was a temporary solution until we had the wall finished and could make a better lock. "Sheila, can you take a break and check our weapons?" I asked when I jogged over to where she and Trell worked on the final bit of wall. It only took two people to move the big logs, so I wanted my weapons expert checking our defenses one last time. Once we were out of the cave, we'd have nowhere left to retreat.
"I will do as you wish," the feline woman said as she stepped away.
"Another log done," Trell said as she tossed her axe down to me.
"Looks like we have about 7 to go," I said as I caught the axe and set it against the wall.
"We'll need to be outside to place the last one," Trell reminded me.
We'd discussed the final keystone log during planning, but I'd pretty much forgotten about it because the end seemed so far away. Now it was time to consider how that last pole was supposed to fit. "I remember," I replied. "It makes sense because of the circle design. We won't be able to squeeze the last log in place from the inside. We can just take it through the door and then leverage it up from outside."
"Yes. Once set, we'll have interlocking logs supporting each other all the way around the wall, just as I said we would."
Trell seemed very proud, and she had every right to be. Our fort was badass, and it was all her design. The spider woman walked with me to the woodpile, and we rolled another log from the dwindling stack. We'd used the central pile as a staging area for building the barricade these past weeks, but now it was almost empty. The 6 remaining large poles sat on top of a few of the smaller 20-footers left over from our original fort. "Ready?" I asked Trell after we'd dragged the log next to the hole in our wall.
"Always," she replied.
We lifted together, and it easily went up. Once we'd propped it almost vertically, it fell a few feet into the hole, so only the top 7 feet was above ground.
"Please hold," Trell said as she stepped backward.
We'd done this so many times it had become second nature, but I was still impressed as I watched her in construction mode. I reached down and picked up the axe without taking my hand off the log or my eyes off of the sweat-drenched spider woman. Trell grabbed a length of rope with one of her human hands and then used her spider legs to climb the wall next to the opening and position herself on top so she could pull the loose log in her direction. With remarkable speed, she twisted the rope so it held the two upright poles together.
"X,"
she said as if she was a surgeon standing over a patient. That was another part of our routine, and I tossed the tool she had just given me back up to her. She snatched it out of the air with lightning-fast reflexes and started chopping madly at the charred top of the log as if it had personally stranded her on this planet. While she worked on the top end, I used another length of rope to tie off the bottom part. When each log was in place, they'd be locked into the two poles on either side. Just as in Trell's example with sticks, it made each section of the fort's curved wall very secure. The dirt at the bottom was just one more safeguard in her design. By the time I was finished with my rope, Trell just about had the top wood chiseled away, so it formed a rudimentary point. We'd done the same with all the other logs, on the assumption that anything big enough to lean over the top might find it painful.
"Are you done yet?"
I asked Trell as a joke.
"Hold your horses."